Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Gans, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Zion, Chapter 7. This perek begins what we might call Act 2 of Sefer Ezra, in which we finally get to meet the man himself. We left off in Perek Vav, Chapter 6, with the inauguration of Bayit Sheni in the 6th year of King Daryavish. In Chapter 7, Perek Zion, Sefer Ezra informs us that a certain amount of time has elapsed since then. Pasuk Aleph begins, V'achar hadvarim ha'ela, b'malchut Artachshasta melech pras, after these events, during the reign of King Artaxerxes of Persia. So it's after a certain amount of time that our story picks up in Perek Zion, now during the reign of King Artachshasta. As we've discussed previously, Sefer Ezra does not include a continuous king list or regnal years, so that generates some ambiguity as to how long exactly has elapsed between Chapter 6 and Chapter 7, Perek Vav and Perek Zion. Many identify this King Artaxerxes as Artaxerxes I, and since we are told in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, that this perek takes place in the king's 7th year, that would date our perek to 458 BCE. This is over 50 years after the inauguration of Bayit Sheni in the year 516. After situating Perek Zion in the reign of King Artaxerxes, Sefer Ezra introduces the protagonist of the rest of our Sefer, Ezra himself. The first 10 psukim of our Perek provide a kind of overview or character portrait of Ezra. This kind of grand introduction to a character is really unparalleled in Tanakh in terms of its length and level of detail. And although Chazal attribute the authorship of Sefer Ezra to Ezra himself, it's likely that this laudatory introduction was written by another editor, maybe Nehemiah, who wanted to make sure that we appreciate the greatness of the leader who's about to step on stage. Picking up in the middle of Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, Ezra, ben Sariah, ben Azariah, ben Chilkiah, ben Shalom, a whole bunch of names. And finally, at the end of Pasuk Hey, verse 5, ben Aaron HaKohen Harosh. So Ezra, the son of Sariah, son of Chilkiah, another dozen generations, going all the way back to Aaron HaKohen Harosh. Aaron, Moshe's brother, and the first Kohen Gadol. So Ezra's introduced with this genealogy that traces back 16 generations, all the way back to Aaron HaKohen, the first Kohen Gadol, the first high priest of the nation of Israel. And we're immediately impressed with Ezra's auspicious lineage and status as an important Kohen. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Who Ezra alami Bavel? This Ezra went up from Bavel. Who sofer mahir b'torat Moshe? And he was a ready scribe in the law of Moshe. Asher natan Hashem Elokei Yisrael, which Hashem, the God of Israel, had given. Vayitain lo hamelech ki yad Hashem Elokav alav kol bakashato. And the king granted him all his requests, according to the hand of Hashem, his God, on him. Ezra makes Aliyah from Bavel during the reign of King Artaxerxes. But recall that Jews have been allowed to go back to Yehuda since the time of Koresh, decades earlier. Why did Ezra, the great Kohen, choose to stay in Bavel longer than he had to? Why didn't he make Aliyah earlier? Chazal suggests that Ezra remained in Bavel as long as his Rebbe, his teacher, Baruch ben Neriah, was still living. Ezra stayed in exile to soak up every last drop of Torah that he could from his Rebbe, and only after Baruch's death did Ezra return to Yehuda. That Torah learning and Torah teaching are essential to Ezra's persona is indicated in the pasuk we just read, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Ezra is described there as Sofer Mahir B'Torat Moshe, an expert Sofer in the law of Moshe, meaning the Torah. Now, we use the word sofer today to refer to a scribe, somebody who writes a Sefer Torah on parchment with ink and a quill. But in Tanakh, the word sofer has a slightly different meaning. It describes a dignitary, often within a royal court, who possessed expertise in reading and writing. Here, Ezra is called Ezra HaSofer because he possesses expertise in the ultimate writing, the ultimate book, which is the Torah. Chazal used the word sofer in Chagiga 15b to mean a Talmud Chacham, an expert in Torah study. According to Chazal, Ezra was also a literal scribe, the way that we understand the word so far today. Chazal say that Ezra was responsible for changing the script in which the words of the Torah scroll are written from Ktav Ivri to Ktav Ashuri, from Paleo-Hebrew script to the square letters that we are familiar with today. So the title Ezra HaSofer may imply that he was both a Talmud Chacham of the highest order and an actual scribe. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, also tells us that Ezra was granted everything he requested from the king, and that the king's favor was the result of Hashem's hand upon him, Kiyad Hashem Elokav Alav. This phrase is a repeating refrain in Sefer Ezra and in Sefer Nehemiah, and expresses a major theme of Shivat Zion that we've mentioned before. In this period, the hand of Hashem appears, not in open miracles, but in hidden ways, like the graciousness of a Persian king. Sefer Ezra reminds us again and again not to miss those moments of divine providence, just because they are disguised as politics as usual. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Ve'ya'alu mi'bnei Yisrael u'min ha'kohanim v'ha'leviyim v'ha'meshorim v'ha'sharim v'ha'netinim el Yerushalayim. There went up some of the children of Israel and the priests and of the Levites and the singers and the porters and the netinim to Yerushalayim bishnat sheva la'artachshasta ha'melech, in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. Ezra does not make Aliyah by himself. He leads a whole group of people, including Kohanim, Leviim of different types, Netinim, the temple laborers whose identity we discussed in chapter 2, Perek Bet. The details of Ezra's journey are recorded in our next Perek, chapter 8, Perek Chet. But here, in this overview of Ezra, we are merely told that he led many people on Aliyah in the seventh year of Artaxerxes. In Psukim Chet and Tet, verses 8 and 9, we are told that Ezra and his party leave Bavel in the first month, the month of Nisan, and arrive in Yerushalayim in the fifth month, the month of Av. We imagine that Ezra timed this journey intentionally to be a kind of second exodus, leaving Bavel in the month of Nisan, the month of national redemption from slavery in Egypt. And Ezra arrives in Yerushalayim in the month of Av, the month of mourning, right? The month of Tisha B'Av, mourning for the Chorban, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Ezra seeks to transform the mourning of Av into a time of celebration, celebrating Shivat Zion. Pasuk Yud, verse 10, tells us the goal of Ezra's Aliyah. Ki Ezra hechin livavo lidrosh et Torah Hashem. For Ezra had dedicated himself to seek the Torah of Hashem, v'la'asot u'lilamed b'Yisrael chok u'mishpat, and to observe it and to teach in Israel statutes and ordinances. Sefer Ezra tells us this goal of Ezra's Aliyah, which is to go to Yehuda to teach Torah and Jewish law. The Gemara in Sanhedrin 21b makes an extraordinary statement. Ra'oi haya Ezra, shetinatein Torah al yado liYisrael, ilmale kidamo Moshe. Ezra would have been worthy for the Torah to be given through him if Moshe Rabbeinu had not preceded him. To Chazal, Ezra is a Moshe-like figure, the conduit through which Hashem's Torah is disseminated to the nation of Israel. Chazal tell us that Ezra founded the council called Anshei Knesset HaGedola, the group of elders that established basic Jewish practices such as brachot and daily prayers, as well as other important rabbinic laws designed to augment Torah law. Unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, however, Ezra HaSofer is not a prophet. It's true that Chazal identify Ezra with the prophet Malachi, but at least in our Sefer, in Sefer Ezra, Ezra does not seek the word of Hashem through direct communion with the divine. Strikingly, the word used here in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, for Ezra's Torah learning is lidrosh, to seek. The object of the verb lidrosh in Tanakh is most often Hashem. For example, when Rivka Imenu goes to find out what's going on with the twins in her womb, the text in Sefer Bereishit says that she goes lidrosh at Hashem, to seek out Hashem. Yet here, with regard to Ezra, the object of the verb lidrosh is not Hashem, but Torat Hashem. In an era in which prophecy is fading and direct communication with God is growing out of reach, Ezra turns to the text of the Torah for direction. This pivot from prophecy to Torah study is a key feature of the rabbinic period, highlighting the transitional nature of Shivat Zion as this bridge between the time of Tanakh and the time of the rabbis. Ezra himself is a figure at the crossroads. He is both a character in Tanakh and, according to Chazal, the founding member of the Anshei Knesset Hagadola, the first rabbinic body. Significantly, Pasuk Yud, verse 10, describes Ezra's activities in a particular order. First, lidrosh, to study, then lasso, to do, and then lilamed, to teach. Ezra didn't just talk the talk. He studied Torah intensely, first to perfect his own conduct, and only then did he turn outwards to share his wisdom and guidance with others through his teaching. This guidance, we will see, is sorely needed in Yerushalayim when Ezra arrives on the scene. In the decades that have passed since Haggai and Zechariah and Zerubbabel and Yehoshua were active, the community has really lost its way spiritually. Ezra will have to navigate the Jewish community's lack of Torah education and lapses in observance as severe as intermarriage. The very fact that Ezra needed to be imported all the way from Bavel to teach Torah in Yehuda tells us about the sorry state of religious life and leadership there. Ezra's Aliyah is fundamentally different from the earlier Aliyot in Sefer Ezra. Sheshbatzar and Zerubbabel returned to Yehuda with the goal of rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash physically. They succeeded. The temple is up and running. Now, Ezra seeks to build up the community spiritually to ensure that the new Beit HaMikdash is more than just a physical bayit, but a genuine mikdash, a holy sanctuary of real divine service. The rest of Perek Zion, chapter 7, presents the Aramaic text of an official letter from King Artaxasta addressed to Ezra that authorizes him to lead an aliyah from Bavel and promises him substantial support. Specifically, Artaxasta makes 5 distinct points in this letter. First, the king grants permission to any and all Jews to accompany Ezra on aliyah to Yerushalayim if they wish. Reading Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13 in translation, I make a decree that all those of the people of Israel and their priests and the Levites in my realm who are minded of their own free will to go to Jerusalem, go with you. The fact that Artaxasta knows to divide the Jews into these 3 categories of Kohanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim, priests, Levites, and Israelites, may indicate that Artaxasta is responding to specific requests from Ezra, perhaps borrowing Ezra's language in this letter of response. Secondly, the king recognizes that the goal of Ezra's aliyah is, as he states in Pasuk Yod Daled, verse 14, to inquire or inspect Yehuda and Yerushalayim according to the law of your God, which is in your hand. The king dispatches Ezra to assess the religious observance of the Jewish community in Yerushalayim and to instruct them in the laws of the Torah if they are found lacking. Third, Ezra is granted permission to carry with him to Yerushalayim the gold and silver donated by the king, as well as the donations from his fellow Jews who stay behind in Bavel. This is reminiscent of chapter 1, Perek Aleph of Sefer Ezra, when Sheshbatzar carried the gold and silver donations of his fellow Jews back to Yerushalayim when he led the first aliyah. King Artaxasta instructs Ezra to use the funds donated from the royal treasury to buy animals for the temple sacrifices and for general temple upkeep. Fourth, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, Artaxasta orders the royal treasurers in the Persian province of Aver Hanahar to support the Beit HaMikdash and those who work there. Artaxasta orders the treasurers in the region to provide a certain amount of silver, wheat, wine, oil, and an infinite amount of salt to Ezra for use in the Beit HaMikdash. Artaxasta also exempts anyone who works in the Beit HaMikdash, including the Kohanim, Levim, and Netinim, from having to pay taxes to the Persian government. Why the generosity? Well, Artaxasta states in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, verse 23, whatever the God of heaven commands, let it be faithfully executed for the house of the God of heaven, lest his wrath fall upon the realm of the king and his sons. Recall that King Daryavish in Perek Vav, chapter 6, had donated to the Beit HaMikdash so that sacrifices and prayers might be offered there on his behalf and on behalf of his royal household. Here, King Artaxasta has a similar motivation. He hopes that his support of the Beit HaMikdash staves off any wrath that Hashem might take out on him or on his dynasty. In his fifth and final point in this letter, Artaxasta grants Ezra broad judicial powers. Ezra is authorized to appoint judges to enforce the observance of Torah law in the Jewish community of Eiver HaNahar. In Pasuk Chaf Vav, verse 26, Artaxasta empowers the Jewish court to enact various punishments, even capital punishment, on those found guilty of violating the Torah. After finishing Artaxasta's letter, Perek Zion concludes with Ezra's own words. Speaking in the first person, Ezra exclaims his gratitude to Hashem for Artaxasta's support. Pasuk Chaf Zion, verse 27. Baruch Hashem Elokei Avotenu, blessed be Hashem, the God of our fathers, Asher Natan Kazot Belev HaMelech, who has put such a thing as this in the king's heart, Lefa'er et Beit Hashem Asher B'Yerushalayim, to glorify the house of Hashem which is in Yerushalayim. Ve'alai Hita Chesed Lifnei HaMelech Ve'yoatzav, and he has extended loving kindness to me before the king and his counselors, U'lechol Sarei HaMelech HaGiborim, and before all the king's mighty princes. Va'ani hitchazakti, and I was strengthened, ki yad Hashem Elokai alai, according to the hand of Hashem, my God, upon me. Ve'akbetza mi Yisrael rashim la'alot imi, and I assembled out of Israel leaders to go up with me. For the third time in our perek, Ezra mentions yad Hashem, the hand of God. Ezra recognizes that Artaxasta's support for him is due to Hashem's chesed, his loyal love for the Jewish people. Ezra's perspective here is not inevitable. One could easily chalk up Persian support for the Jews and for the Beit HaMikdash to a shrewd political strategy to buy Jewish allegiance to the Persian crown and to win the protection of the Jewish God. But Ezra teaches us not to be so cynical and to look for and appreciate the hidden hand of Hashem in world events. Va'ani hitchazakti, says Ezra. I was strengthened, and I began to prepare for Aliyah. Ezra teaches us that choosing to see Hashem's hand guiding our way provides the strength we need to move forward. This shir is dedicated L'Zecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudis Bas Gedalyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.